You're listening to Mom and Doc Talk, where we talk all things healing pans and pandas with an emphasis on homeopathy. Hi, everybody, and welcome back to Mom and Doc Talk. We are joined today by a fantastic member of our team, Dr. Katie Rowley, who's our medical director. We are here to give you hopefully a bit of a quickie on what it would look like with healing with homeopathy when you have autism as part of your case. So we are not autism exclusive in our practice. We focus on PANS and PANDAS, but we have a lot of overlap with PANS and autism. And so there are a lot of kids that we work with that have autism in addition to PANS, and it can impact the way we see healing with homeopathy. So I don't want to take up a ton of time going over the specifics about like the differences between autism, PANS and PANDAS and where they overlap and everything. We talk about that a lot in episode in the past with Dr. Anju Usman Singh. So we'll put a link to that episode in the show notes if you want to check that out. But we're going to talk more specifically about homeopathy and what to expect today. So Dr. Rowley, let's start with what like the basic, very like 20,000 foot overview of autism versus PANS and PANDAS, like where there's overlap and where there might be some differences.
Sure. So I think that the overlap comes where a lot of the symptomatology can look the same. So autism for sure has strong components of OCD in it often, right? Mm-hmm. So that's a big place where they overlap. And then depending on it's a spectrum, right, of autism. So there's different levels of intensity, right, or pervasiveness of the symptoms throughout. And that is very true of PANS as well. And so in some of the more severe cases in autism, you'll definitely see the rage that you'll see in PANS. The OCD, like we mentioned, there's a lot of sleep disturbance in both. Mm-hmm. And then let's see what else. So there's the behavior things. Oftentimes there's that social component too, right? It's the definition of autism that it's a social, emotional, a way of functioning, right? That syndrome right. that leads right. them to the And so there's a lot of changes in social functioning in PANS as well. And so I think it gets really tricky sometimes because it can look very, very similar.
Yeah. And there can be some overlap too with like the stimming that you'll see in autism, and it can look sometimes like tics, and sometimes the stimming can be clear and then it changes and sort of alters to look like tics. And one of the things that we can see happen frequently, it's like sort of one of two things in our practice, right? We've got the people who were diagnosed with autism, but really PANS makes more sense. Or we've got people who have clear autism and then had a shift, like a clear shift, and that has a more PANS type presentation. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So I think I have a number of cases on my caseload where from very, very, very early age, like sometimes even from shortly after birth, there were signs of autism spectrum disorder. So lack of eye contact or lack of interest, like lack of social interest, not interacting with other people, things like that, where it was, you know, there's a pretty clear autism diagnosis that's there. And then later on in life, 5, 8, 10 years later, they can have some sort of illness. And then there's a clear escalation of the symptoms. And maybe there was, a number of parents will say, you know, we had a child who was diagnosed with autism. It was there, but they were very high functioning. And then there's a sudden escalation in the severity of things in relation to an illness or in relation to a mold exposure a lot of the time. And so then there's this definitive point in time where it shifted and things that were not, maybe they still could fit their autism symptoms, but they were not present before. And now they are. And that to me is often very indicative of that's what the PANS onset looks like.
Jody, I know we've talked before, you know, I don't know how much you've shared in the podcast, and I'm hoping you're willing to share some of this because I know that in your exploration of what could be happening with Avery, when all of this first started, at one point you were told that you just needed to accept that your daughter was going to have an autism diagnosis.
Yeah, it was, that was actually one of the things that launched me in the direction of homeopathy. Because we had done, you know, some stuff and things just kept getting worse. And Her neurologist at the last appointment was like, well, you know, you just need to settle in and take the, you know, meds for the psychiatric symptoms and just adjust and get comfortable with having an autism diagnosis. And I didn't know a whole lot about autism. I knew a little bit, but the one thing to me that I felt, I just like Avery was a highly intelligent child. Behaviorally, everything was on. There was zero signs of anything before it turned. And so I felt really, really certain that autism wasn't where we belonged, but a lot of her symptoms did fit in the autism category. And I think that happens quite frequently. But I think either way, had it even been autism, I still would have been like, okay, homeopathy can improve quality of life. So we'll go that direction too. Yeah. But I think it was like like one of my nice little nudges I got to move into homeopathy.
Yeah. I think sometimes the overlap can be enough that in these more subtle cases, sometimes you don't really actually know for sure whether it's autism or Pan's Pandas until you start to see how they respond to homeopathy and what sort of changes come about. Would you say that you agree with that, Dr. Rowley?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's go ahead and shift gears and talk a little. Oh, go ahead, Jody. Do you have something else to add?
I was just mom thinking because so like this is like a spot with a lot of moms where there's a lot of kind of once you get into homeopathy, we're trying to figure out whether it's a Pan's Pandas thing or whether it's an autism thing. And I'm constantly taking it back to homeopathy. That's the lovely thing about homeopathy is either way, homeopathy can help regardless of what it is or exactly where it's coming from.
Yeah. So one of the things I just want to set as a framework for when we talk about in this second half here about what it looks like to heal with homeopathy when you have a child who's on the spectrum is that I personally, and I believe Dr. Rowley, you do too, and at Resilience Naturopathic in general, we have the understanding that autism itself is not something that needs to be cured, that autism is a way that the brain is wired, a way of relating to the world that is not inherently bad or that something that is wrong with the child or with the adult for that matter, that it's not something that is wrong with the person, that what we are looking at, and when we talk about healing with homeopathy, we're talking about the suffering associated with that diagnosis. So you can live a happy life being a person who is on the spectrum and still relate to the world the way that you do with having that particular diagnosis and reduce or eliminate the suffering that could be associated with it. So that's what we're talking about. We're not talking about taking somebody who is on the autism spectrum and then making them neurotypical. That's not the approach that we take. And that's not how we see the condition. We don't see it as something that by its very nature needs to be fixed. So Dr. Rowley, what do you see? There's like several patterns, right? So it's a little bit different depending on the circumstance that we're in. So what do you see when you're dealing with somebody who has autism with a later onset of like Pan's Pandas coming on top of it? What do you see with healing?
Typically, I see that we go in reverse order. And so the PANS is usually the thing that improves first. And so I'll give it a specific example of a case of a child that had autism. And then I think it was around maybe 10-ish. He had a severe sudden onset of OCD with like the cleanliness, excessive showering, restricted eating. And it was a very big definitive shift, an increase in anxiety, and now, you know, unable to do school in any way. And so as we worked with homeopathy, the OCD slowly improved in intensity, and then the anxiety improved. We worked kind of like lessening the intensity and frequency of those PAN symptoms until we really pretty much resolved those things back to the same level that there was like a little bit of OCD tendency before, but it wasn't like disorder level. Mm-hmm. It was more personality kind of level. Mm-hmm. And so we worked back to that. And then now we're working more on the autism-like symptoms. And his main challenge with autism, he's an incredibly intelligent child, incredibly bright. But they're based on like the social, right? Like social is really his obstacle. Like I'll often ask parents when there's autism in a case and we get to the point where there's really no more pants. He can get sick. He doesn't flare. His symptoms don't change with illness. He has a healthy immune response. And now we're working on, I said to his mom, you know, what do you feel like, what aspect of his autism do you feel it is that really holds him back from living his most independent, well-functioning life? And it's that he just really doesn't want to interact with anyone. Like, you know, he's highly intelligent. He's super interested in a lot of different science things, but he has no interest in doing anything where he'd have to interact with anyone. So living on his own in everyday life would be a little bit difficult, right? And so that's the kind of thing that we're working on, like getting to the root of what is it about interacting with people? What kind of sensory things? What is it about conversation that's difficult? And so those are the things that we're addressing now. And we are starting to see some improvement in those things. And even like you start to get some improvement in stuff that was present before the PANS onset, but you never really associated it as part of the autism disorder. And yeah. I thought of that because I thought of a specific symptom that we were, like his independent function, like his ability to make his own meals, right? And he's, I think 17 now or so. And so like his ability to make his own meals and his ability to just, you know, to do his schoolwork and things that you didn't necessarily know could improve, right? You might think right. that some of those things are just part of his level of functioning, right. but they can get better.
Yeah. So we see also some cases where the PANS and autism have a less clear demarcation, where it's not, it was clearly autism and then clearly, boom, there was a sudden onset of PANS, because all PANS cases, like, are not sudden onset, right? Like only 40% of PANS cases are sudden onset. So there's an awful lot of kids that we see that have that like intermingling mix. And it's not always clear to parents whether it's truly autism or if it was always PANS. And these are the cases that can be a little bit more tricky, because we, one, will have more clarity after we start to see how they respond to homeopathy and what responds to homeopathy. And then the way that their case moves through management is a little bit different in my experience. And Dr. Rolla, you can chime in with anything that you disagree with or whatever. So a lot of times with PANS and PANDAS cases, we see rather rapid changes, not always, but more commonly, we're going to see rapid changes in symptoms and rapid changes with remedies. So more fast and dramatic improvements in some cases, but a lot more rapid changes. So like if these are the people who might need changes every couple of weeks in the beginning, or like every visit, they're getting a new remedy. And generally when we have a mix of PANS and autism, especially if there's like a predominant strong autism underlying, we're going to see a lot more slow and steady changes rather than those rapid changes. Do you agree in general with that, Dr. Rowley?
Yeah, I think that in general, that is true. It's less of the big steps forward, big steps back.
Yeah. Yeah. Less of a roller coaster. You're on more of like, you're on like a little kid roller coaster, you know, like there's still ups and downs, but it's not as dramatic, not as like, you know, not going to make you sick, the same way that, you know, a big kid roller coaster would. So one of the things that we can also see that can help us differentiate is when we see clear improvements in PANS, PANDAS type symptoms, but steady state between remedies, or between like even when they're doing well and responding well to a remedy, of more of the persistent autism type symptoms. And that can give us an indication of whether we have PANS plus autism or if it's maybe more PANS. That's when we can get things a little bit more clear, just seeing how things are improving. I think one of the things to point out is that when someone is on the spectrum, some of the things that improvements that we really do see with homeopathy, language acquisition, not necessarily like becoming somebody going from being nonverbal to being Ernest Hemingway, but much greater ability to communicate and willingness to communicate, and catching up to a degree to whatever point they're going to reach on their own. Because again, it's a wide spectrum. And so they're with homeopathy, we can't make somebody transcend what their natural innate capabilities are, but we can help them meet that. What other things do you think that you've seen that we really can see improvements with in kids with autism with homeopathy?
Just real quick before we move on from language, one thing that I usually say is we can expect it to be more functional. So maybe they always use a device to communicate, but they're much more effective, and what they can communicate is much greater on that device, right? That might be one thing. Or maybe it is gains in verbal language, or more expressive language, that kind of stuff. But other things that I definitely see improve are, like I said before, the ability, so the sensory things, right? So oftentimes some of that, one aspect of the social challenges can just be the overstimulation from sensory input. And so I see that frequently reduce in a higher ability to tolerate those sensory inputs. And then to some level, it's also the processing of it. Like sometimes I've had cases of autism. Autism can present differently in females than it presents in males, and can be missed as a diagnosis for that reason sometimes in females. And some of that is just in the way that they compensate in social interactions. But I've had some cases where they can pick up on social cues that they couldn't pick up on before, that they would just miss, or that they would misinterpret, and they are much more able to correctly interpret and pick up on those things, which can make the social interactions much easier on them and therefore more willing to.
Well, and then there's also the aspect of like reducing the sensory sensitivities and the overstimulation, so that, you know, I'm always like a chicken and egg kind of thing. Like, it's easier to pick up on one cue if you're not having your attention drawn to 10 different cues, right? So if you have reduced sensory sensitivity, it's easier to pay attention to like one thing that feels challenging if you're not bombarded by 10 things. So reduced sensory sensitivity for touch, for tastes and textures, for sounds. We can see some improvements in like gut function, all sorts of like physical complaints that we hear about that kids with autism routinely experience. So improving gut function, improving all of these aspects that relates to their environment and the way that they respond to it too, right? So like we all reach a point, every single one of us on this call reaches a point where we are overstimulated and sensory stimulated. And then we're probably all respond to it differently. Like I might be a person who gets angry, and Jody might be a person who gets sad, and Katie, you know, Dr. Rowley might be a person who gets anxious. And so we're all going to respond with our own reaction to being overstimulated. So we can help reduce that reactivity and reduce that specific susceptibility to anger, sadness, anxiety, et cetera. Cognitive improvements too. Do you want to talk about any cognitive gains that you see?
Yeah. So you can just see that improvement in functioning.
Yeah. So like we see improvements in executive function. Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. I was going to say so that, and then also you can have people, again, it's a spectrum. So you can have people who are highly intelligent and then people with lower intelligence. And I've seen, I haven't ever seen people become less intelligent, but sometimes, so I have seen people who were, you know, lower intelligence suddenly start to like process things better and understand, and they can learn better, right? Homeopathy can also help in like learning disorders and things like that. But it's interesting what you see sometimes when you actually, because they do a lot of neurobehavioral testing, right? So you'll go to see like the neuropsychologist or the developmental pediatrician, and they'll do testing. And so oftentimes they'll have tests of their cognitive function and their processing. And I've seen cases where they were highly, highly intelligent, like super high IQs in most areas, but their processing is super, super low. And you can see that you can see it kind of even out to where their processing comes up to match their high intelligence. And so now they can actually utilize that information and pick up on, you know, the things that they are really good at, they can utilize them better. I don't know if I explained that well, but
yeah. Was there any other takeaways that you think are important for people to just be aware of as they're considering homeopathy with a child who has autism?
Just to the point that you made about gut health, I know there's a lot when you do functional treatments for autism, there's oftentimes a lot of focus on the testing and the microbes because, you know, considering how the gut affects a lot of neurological and brain function. And when there's all those infections, you don't have to kill them with all the anti-things. I've seen homeopathy take care of a lot of those imbalances right on its own. And that can oftentimes be more tolerated, especially when they're sensitive kids. So,
yeah. I think that the main thing for me on the doc side to take away, and then Jody, I'll see if there's anything else you want to offer to moms from everything that you've basically been listening to right now, is just to really drive home that with healing with homeopathy, when you have a child on the spectrum, it's probably going to be slower and longer process. And it can happen. And I know that if you're a member of our Facebook group, just do a couple of searches. We actually have an interview with an adult who was diagnosed, an adult male who was diagnosed with autism later in life, and shared all of the ways that homeopathy alone has really helped to integrate the ability to like navigate life more effectively with his family and everything. So it's something that can help a lot. And it's probably going to be, especially if you've got a child, it's going to be slow and gradual, but that's also a great thing because you're not having wild fluctuating ups and downs. So that's the main takeaway, is that just expect it to be a little on the slower side when you're, especially when you get to the place where you are primarily focusing on the autism spectrum. It'll probably be faster and more fluctuating when there's PANS and autism, and it'll likely slow down when you're dealing with more of the spectrum. Anything you want to offer to moms, Jody, and dads?
It was nice listening to you guys chat today. Like I said earlier, I don't personally have experience with autism. My only experience is watching other moms in the group share that have kiddos with autism, and being the mom of a child, not that has autism, but is a longer healer, that slow process that really has just crawled along. And I can empathize with that, but man, it's so worth it. And some of the wins that I see some of the moms with kiddos with autism share, or my very, very favorite ones, are the ones where kiddos are starting to speak, or, you know, say mom or something like that. You know, I see the progress happening through those shares. Mm-hmm. So I know it's possible, just like with PANS and everything else. So
yeah. So there's hope. There's hope to reduce and eliminate suffering for kids with autism, and your kid with autism is also perfect and does not need to be changed. They just need to reduce that suffering. So, all right, as always, guys, if you've got questions for us, we'd love to hear from you. The ways to contact us will be in the show notes. Until next time, take care, everybody.
We hope you found this episode helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. We try to get a new episode out every week. You can make sure you don't miss any by following us on Spotify or subscribing to our channel on YouTube. If you want to connect with us more, join our Facebook group, Homeopathy for PANS and Pandas, where we have exclusive weekly videos and answer your questions about, you guessed it, homeopathy for PANS and Pandas throughout the week. If you are already a member, give us a shout out and let us know what you thought about this episode. If you aren't on Facebook and would like to reach us, you can email us at podcast@resiliencenaturopathic.com. Until next time, take care and remember, this won't be forever.